Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A trio of former U.S. soldiers are on a mission to have their TV pilot, Figure It Out, become a series. You'll meet this threesome, Tim Kirkpatrick, Brian Tamayo, and Daniel Mills, when they join me next. The network is Momitu. The goal? Showcase content from around the globe through smart TV sets and devices, and as a multi-channel bundle. In our next half hour, you'll hear key executives Brian Luzile and Charles Angeles. Also ahead, House of the Dragon launches, Netflix taps California gold, our new classic trivia question and show to know, and it's farewell, reliable sources. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Google Podcasts, other leading podcast destinations, and starting today, Podvine.com. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for having some of your Monday afternoon with us on the program all about TV's current and future. 76 degrees at the top of the hour. We've had rain on and off all day. We're expecting it through the rest of today and tonight here in the New York metro area. Wherever you are, I hope all things are good as you kick off your week. And thank you for having us be part of your week kickoff. We have some wonderful guests coming away over the next 90 minutes or so, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in, and, of course, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is already in business for you, and I believe we have someone just getting into the room. So use that room to pose your questions or feedback. The room is SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, others will be live with you. Our trio from Figure It Out will join us from various locations in California and Hawaii after these news notes. It looks like we'll have to wait a day or more to learn viewership for HBO's House of the Dragon debut last night. However, one thing we can report with certainty this afternoon is that at least 3,000 HBO and HBO Max customers endured outage problems. An HBO spokesperson acknowledged the blackout, adding that the problem was largely among Amazon Fire TV users. Impacted customers were asked to reboot their devices. How's this for a California gold rush at Netflix? The mega content venture picked up $37.1 million in tax credits from state authorities. Netflix will use the credits for a pair of movies, including a sequel to Zack Snyder's sci-fi epic Rebel Moon. Peacock is turning to NBC for a viewership blast on its scripted mystery series, The Resort. NBC will play the first episode Wednesday night after America's Got Talent, followed by a trailer for episode 2. The results started on Peacock late July and wraps up September 1st. And now a trio of quickies before we get to our first trio of guests. Folk singer Buffy St. Marie will be the subject of an American Masters special November 22nd on PBS. Abbott Elementary and Ozark were named Best Comedy and Drama Series, respectively, at the 2022 African American Film Critics Awards Saturday from Los Angeles. Bel Air picked up Best New Series honors. And breaking news, ABC will go forward with The Company You Keep, adapting the popular Korean series My Fellow Citizen. Milo Benigliya plays a con artist who romances a CIA officer and is expected to be a mid-season show on ABC. And that is news notes for today. One of the most important films, and to my mind, one of the best films I've ever seen in my life, was made about 75 years ago. It was The Best Years of Our Lives, the celebrated story about three soldiers who come back from World War II and try to readjust themselves to civilian life in the same hometown. It's an incredible film. It gets constantly played on Turner Classic Movies. And if you've never seen it, it really still is a remarkable movie that holds up today. And even films like, you have the same thing like Coming Home, others, Best Years of Our Lives, to me, is still the first and the best dealing with that theme. Well, we're going to introduce you now to three former U.S. soldiers who have come up with a comedic pilot. You might say their take on The Best Years of Our Lives called Figure It Out. Why are we talking about this pilot? First of all, it got a screening last month at Warner Brothers Studios to great acclaim. And secondly, the pilot has been picked up by Amazon Prime Video. Well, joining us live are, as I said, the three people who put together this pilot through a production company they founded called Condition One Media. First up, from Newport Beach, California, Tim Kirkpatrick. Tim, welcome in.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
And from other parts of California, Brian Tamayo. Brian, happy to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And you're very welcome about that. And finally, from Honolulu, Hawaii, Daniel Mills. Daniel, good to hear you.
Thanks for having us.
Tim, we'll start with you. How did this all come about?
That's a long-winded question, but just in a brief, Daniel and Brian, I used to work at a Veterans Adjustment Center years ago, and we would hear, you know, several stories about veterans transitioning out of the military, and, you know, I thought my story was unique of the way I transitioned out, and turned out we all basically had the same story. It's like, you know what, there's a TV show here. Daniel's like, hey, you know, I want to be a part of it. Brian's like, hey, I'll jump on and produce. And that's literally how it was born.
And Brian, take up the story from there. How did it go from being an idea for all three of you to a pilot that actually got made and that got screened last month at Warner Brothers?
Yeah, we just, you know, we immediately started brainstorming, trying to figure out, you know, exactly what, you know, kind of concept we're going to go through. And, you know, we went from maybe having a lead role for a male to then we're like, you know what, let's have a female lead role. Take point on this, and then we went from there, and just, you know, the pandemic happened. Tim was bored, and he really, you know, hit the ground running, writing us scripts, and we, you know, gave him our input, and soon after that, we started doing the auditions for the roles, and it just, everything just happened, like, kind of fast. I mean, it took some time, but it happened pretty fast, and fast forward a couple months later, we're filming, and then, you know, we're screening over at Warner Brothers, so it's been an amazing journey.
Daniel, you were one of the co-stars in the pilot. First of all, was that something you were originally going to do when you were able to make the pilot? And secondly, how did Warner Brothers pick up about this and decide, hey, let's make this a screening in our place?
I always wanted to get into it from the beginning and the inception of it all. You know, it came down to just one day us working at the Veterans Center, and Tim and I were just going over things, and we were both discussing our futures, and, you know, I was discussing how I wanted to be an actor, and Tim was going through film school. Bryant was there at the time as well, and he was like, you know, I'll produce, I'll act. So in other words, even when we were putting this together, we were always thinking of ways to make sure we were all involved in it in one way or another. And luckily, you know, when it came down to it in the end, like, we were able to write some characters, and I was able to slide into a role very easy. It was very nice on the end. And when it comes to Warner Brothers, we were reaching out. We were trying to see about the best places to see about getting things done. Warner Brothers hit us back, and we loved their response. And so we went back and forth for a while, and it all just kind of fell into place, which is one of the very nice things about it all, is that through, even though there were plenty of struggles and everything else along the way, when it came down to the finished product and getting everything done, it all felt like it was meant to be for us. We're really happy about that.
Mm-hmm. And Tim, to sort of bring this full circle, where does the pilot stand? My understanding is on Amazon Prime Video. How long has it been playing there since the screening at Warner Brothers, and what's been the reaction to it?
Great question. So I actually reached out to Amazon and pitched them a licensing deal. It took a couple weeks for the legal to clear, but then on Tuesday it went through, it got published, and we started spreading the word, and it has blown up. We've gotten incredible feedback, incredible support from the veteran community and from civilians alike. And because of that already, today we went into development for the rest of the episode. So it's went from this long years and years of hard work to within a week of going live on Amazon Prime, we're now just today hitting the development date. So me and Brian Daniel have, before he jumped on this call, we've been in the office back and forth talking online, talking on the phone about, hey, what are we going through next? So we're developing the story as we speak now.
How many episodes do you want to do? And has Amazon said, we are definitely going to take this? We're going to take this series, bring it to us, we're taking it on Prime Video or on Amazon Freevee, which is their ad-supported service.
So we're going to be working on 8. We're probably going to reshoot the original pilot, you know, since we'll have a bigger budget in line, work with that. But Amazon's like, bring it on. They want the content, and, you know, they have the platform, and they have a very easy, you know, customer value journey to buy the episodes. So they're like, bring it on. So we're bringing it on.
And we are speaking with the trio of former U.S. soldiers that are bringing on Figure It Out. It looks like we'll be on Amazon one way or the other, either Prime Video or on Freevee, which is their ad-supported service. We have joining us live from Newport Beach, California, Tim Kirkpatrick, from other parts of California, Brian Tamayo, and from Hilo, Hawaii, Daniel Mills. And they're all together through a production company called Condition One Media. And they're all joining us live this half hour in an internet radio exclusive on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Nonbaum with you live from New York on this Monday afternoon from the other side of the U.S. of A, New York, where it is 76 degrees at the top of the hour. We have had rain on and off all day today. We are supposed to get more to help us with our drought, which is, while it is semi-serious, not as serious as the droughts that are going on all around the country. And we hope that you're getting beneficial rains as well wherever you may be. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a special edition of our show coming your way on Thursday, and it's very, very special. We will have as our lead and sole guest, Georgia Lee, the executive producer and showrunner of Netflix's new New York-produced story about an Asian-American woman making her way up the legal eagle scale. It's called Partner Track. It's based on the acclaimed novel by Helen Wan, and it's getting a lot of advanced buzz. Georgia Lee from Partner Track on Netflix, and a new project she's working on to try to encourage more Netflix probing produced by people of color. That's coming your way on a special edition of Tomorrow Be Televised this Thursday, special time, 1 hour later than usual, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brian, I mentioned The Best Years of Our Lives and also films like Coming Home that deal in a dramatic way with the theme of soldiers coming back from the war and having to readjust their lives in the case of Best Years in their hometown. Did either of those films or others with that theme give all three of you any inspiration for putting together Figure It Out?
You know, I kind of have to say I really don't really like some of those movies just because they don't hit exactly, you know, the hammer on the nail on how it really is to actually come back home. I mean, some of the stuff is exaggerated, but some of the stuff is, you know, true. So I'd have to say, not really. No, I wasn't really inspired by those films.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, what about MASH? What about the fact that it took a situation like war and dealing with it from the standpoint of sort of dark comedy?
See the parallel with MASH. It's for us. It was definitely more of the. You know, of course, MASH is during Vietnam. Ours is definitely from the perspective of, you know, us coming back during this time frame, and that was, like, one of the bigger parts in the show to us was, like, that way that our generation and people, you know, on either side of our generation can relate to that and the modern issues that are happening with it. So I can definitely see the parallels between that and MASH. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. So, Tim, talk about the storyline. How long did it take to develop it? What happens in this pilot?
So that's a great question. So it focuses on a female Marine who gets let go of the military early. So that actually happened to a bunch of my Marines in my unit when we got back from Afghanistan. A lot of us had to reapply for our jobs to stay in, and they just started letting Marines and the sailors go. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, that's interesting. You know, you would think that the government or the military would want to keep on, you know, all those good Marines and sailors, but at the end of the day, they wanted to free up space to bring in the new guys. So, you know, I didn't really think about it at the time, but as I was brainstorming with Daniel and Brian, I'm like, you know what? This is a side that most people hadn't really seen before, so let's go ahead and examine it a little bit closer. And we went from, in the very beginning, actually, Daniel was going to be playing the lead role. But when the Me Too movement kicked on and, you know, we want to start doing a little bit more female empowerment stories. Like, you know, let's turn it from a male to a female. Also, because of the fact that the character becomes homeless for a night in the first episode, it helps us connect as an audience more to that role. And because of, you know, those changes in the script, we have seen all this amazing feedback, like how much these characters are relatable, you know, how funny it is. And we're taking something that's a very serious subject and we're putting a very comedic spin on it, which is very hard to do. However, myself, Brian, and Daniel, we've experienced this transition from being in the military to civilian. So this is why it's based on a true story, because it's our story. So really, we're just dabbling into events that happen on our transition now, and we're still transitioning. So the storyline continues.
Mm-hmm. Because you have, and I'll throw this to you, Brian, you have both male and female characters. How did this impact the casting process? Did you want to have people like Daniel, who were former U.S. soldiers or had some sort of experience in terms of having to transition from the armed forces to civilian life?
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to have people that, you know, served in the military in, during casting, but, I mean, honestly, if they were, I just wanted to see if they were going to bring it. If they're going to bring it and they really kill that role, I mean, we're going to go with that. But, yeah, we do have some members that are in the military. But, yeah, it just depends on, like, how they brought it when they came to audition.
So, Daniel, with that in mind, did you have a chance to interact with the cast and talk about your experiences and try to encourage them to, let's say, engage their characters to think about similar experiences that they might, if they were not in the military, they might have had, or to think about a transition of some form, no matter what their status in life is?
Absolutely. I would say the biggest would probably be Natalie, just because in her role, like, you know, her coming out of the Marine Corps, she herself had never actually been in her service. So we, you know, had to show her a few things. We told her some stories just to give her some background and some input. And she had some veteran friends as well, and she took information from them and was able to put her character together. But during the entire process, like, you know, we were getting asked questions and, you know, sharing stories and having a really good time. And, like, that bond between us all and that open communication, I think, really translated through to the cast and their experiences to be able to put it together to make the roles work.
Tim, talk about the cast, because largely they are newcomers. As far as I know. And to mention some of the cast names, there's Natalie Gadamez, there's Joe DeLillo, Alexandra Bukova, Kate Farrow. What was it like to bring them together, get the best performances you could out of them, and be true to the storyline you and your colleagues developed?
Sure. So during the casting process, I mean, when we sent out the notices to the casting director, we got thousands of submissions. And that's a lot of information to sift through, but everyone deserved a chance. But in the case of the cast, every one of them showed out differently than their competition. There was some aspect or another in their audition tapes that really stood out. And when we brought them in, of course, we did solo audition casting for them first. And then when we did the callback, we ended up doing a group audition. To see how they interact. And Daniel was a part of it, so he was helping them out along the way. But ultimately, it was the actor who did the research before coming back into the group and really nailed it. I mean, we did what we could within the small amount of time that we had to prepare them. But ultimately, these are, you know, they're stand-up comedians. They're, you know, aspiring actors. They're, you know, the idea behind the fact that they researched what they researched, and then the timing of the jokes that they created. A lot of the dialogue that's in the show is improv. When I'm behind the director's monitor and I'm watching him, it's like I'm watching it for the very first time because I didn't really write that dialogue. So I'm like, this is great, guys. So they really immerse themselves in the role. And, you know, there was other actors who came very, very close, but there was these little aspects, those little characteristics, those little traits that they brought that really stood out that made the casting decision, you know, that much easier, but it was incredibly difficult.
But the improvisation that took place, was it just in dialogue or, for example, was it in, like, changes of character or mood swings or things like that?
Both. I wouldn't say so much mood swings, but there's a dance sequence where they decided, hey, we're going to improv this dance and we're just going to do this. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see what you got. And then, of course, when you know, those first couple takes and those first couple setups, actors tend to go along with the script. But then you kind of have to remind them, hey, guys, enjoy yourself. Have fun. Put yourself in that person's perspective. Put them in that mindset and just run free with it. And then you start seeing, you know, take three and take four and take five. They're staying on the storyline with the plot, with A plot, B plot, and C plot, and with the runner, but they start to veer off, and because they become the character, and I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So we had to make sure we stay with the story. The narrative is still there. However, a lot of the parts that they came up with were so on spot, were so in character. I'm like, it just worked. I'm like, thank you. It was a dream come true seeing the words that I wrote on a piece of paper coming to life right in front of me. So it was great.
Yeah. Brian, did any of the cast members in doing their research go to the type of readjustment center or outreach that brought all three of you together?
To my knowledge, I know that they did research as far as, you know, what the mission of the vet centers and what they do. But we really had a lot of discussions with them about, you know, what our expectation was, you know, how it was, you know, coming back and really what the adjustment is, just exactly when you get out of the service and how you don't know what's going to happen next. You're scared. You know, you go from being, you know, whether it's leading, you know, Marines one day, and then you come home and you're just kind of like, who am I? And you kind of question yourself and you kind of have to figure out exactly, you know, what to do next. So, I mean, we really had a lot of discussions with them and really talked about the difficulties that veterans face when they get exit service.
Figure It Out is the TV series pilot about U.S. soldiers coming back from war to readjust to civilian life, a pilot that was presented at Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank, California last month to great acclaim, and now it looks like it's going to become a series, possibly through either Amazon Prime Video or Amazon Freevee, both of which are carried on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. We are speaking with the three people who made this pilot and possible series happen. Tim Kirkpatrick joining us live from Newport Beach, California. Brian Tamayo from other parts of California. Honolulu, Hawaii, Daniel Mills. They're all with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New Haven, York. And if you're questioning Connor in our remaining minutes with them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And in case you missed the beginning, we have a brand-new podcast affiliate joining us today. Their name is podvine.com. It's podvine.com. They not only have taken our most recent episodes, but they actually have gotten a library of about 300 of our segments from the last couple of years. So check out podvine.com, and to all of you tuning us in that way, I understand some of you have already heard us, and you like us, and we really do appreciate it. So I hope you make us a regular habit to live and on replay through podvine.com. Daniel, during the Warner Brothers screening, did you find a lot of feedback of the kind of people like standing up or saying to you afterward, after the screening, I know exactly what you're talking about here because I've lived that. I've been there. That's me that you're documenting in dramatic form or comedic form.
Few people come up afterwards, and it was a feeling you can't really put into words when, you know, through this entire process, and someone comes up to you afterwards, and they're like, "Hey, so just so you know, like, this is super relatable to me. You know, I've been there. I know that situation. I have a situation that's so close to it that, you know, I felt like I was seeing it myself, and it felt good to laugh at that situation and to see the brighter side of it all." Yeah, those things definitely came up, and for me, it was one of the biggest reasons why this all feels so worth it.
Tim, if there's one thing that you wanted the pilot to deliver to viewers and to the audience, what would that be about the whole subject of making the transition to civilian life?
That's a great question. So civilians and veterans, right, we all have different transition stories. So in the show, we have two veterans and two civilians. So within their storylines, they're all going to have different transitions within their storyline on the show, because I want both of the population to be able to connect and relate to those characters, or else it's just the demographic kind of lowers on who's going to want to watch, you know, take part in the show. So it was definitely a mission between myself, Daniel, and Brian to make sure that we splice enough here and, you know, enough narrative here and there to keep the audience engaged, to make sure that this is not just about servicemen and women getting out, but it's also about, you know, the average day person, you know, leaving their parents' house for the first time, getting laid off from their first job, you know, whatever it is. These are all transitions in life that we're going to face and we will face. So that's why I want to make sure that we're kind of like on an even playing field with those narratives throughout the show.
So given the fact that it looks like this has a great chance to become a series, this is for anybody, how are you going to fund this? Are you looking at crowdfunding? Are you looking at bootstrap? Are you looking at NFTs? some association with a metaverse situation. How are you going to fund this?
Well, we're already raking in quite the amount on Amazon just from Tuesday. But we have other financiers who have been coming on since they've been seeing and hearing about what we're doing. There actually was talk about an NFT financier on another show we were on. But ultimately, we're doing well enough within our – because we're selling on our website, conditionalmedia.com, and on Amazon or Prime Video. So we can dabble on that budget. It's not an issue. However, the more we can get in with the financiers, obviously the better we can make – and hire the crew, you know, the cast, make sure we have everything squared away. But we just started development today on the rest of the season, so it's looking very promising.
Mm-hmm. Also, if you go to series, are there any plans to are there any certain, like, the plot developments you want to bring in? Are there certain themes, let's say, you didn't cover in the pilot that you want to cover as story arcs about the whole process of transitioning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're going to have – I mean, there's a whole – we introduced 27 characters in the pilot, and we've only seen, like, 8 of them. So we have a bunch of storylines still to cover. But we want to cover everything from transitioning to, you know, the sexuality to, you know, job transitions to, you know, all different types of those transitions. But ultimately, I want to make sure that – the characters that are in the show, they have dedicated episodes from their vantage point. That way the whole audience can relate to each one of the core characters. So tons of story to cover still.
While you wait, this is for anybody to get this series rolling, are there any plans to, because you had a successful screening at Warner Brothers, any plans to showcase this at upcoming film and TV festivals, whether it is the North Fork Festival at Long Island or Gotham Week here in New York, which is in September, or festivals around other festivals around the country?
So we're actually involved with the LA Film Festival quite hands-on. So we're waiting on some feedback from them. But we're submitting all of the time. But since we are collecting what we're collecting on Amazon, I'm not sure if that's something that we're going to invest highly in. We kind of had our own film festival at the screening. Warner Bros. Discovery was there. Paramount was there. The Department of the VA was there. A nonprofit called Emerging Veterans and Players was on deck for Ways Entertainment. So we had quite the showing and quite the high list of guests. So I'm not sure if we're going to pursue too much outside of California when it comes to that.
Final question for any of you. Has it hit you that you are on the verge of doing something that so many creators, so many producers want to do with broadcast networks, cable networks, mega content services like Amazon or Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or new channels, and like the one we're going to be showcasing our next half hour, Momitu, that you're on the verge of getting a series off the ground?
Yeah, it definitely hit me like hard when I saw it on, you know, in the theater. I was like, man, we did that. You know, we created that. We made that. And seeing that, you know, and the big screen was like a huge like motivation and being like, wow, like, you know what I mean? We're already on our way, and just the way things have been lining up, like, we've just been incredibly blessed with how everything's going so far.
The pilot again is Figure It Out. It recently played at Warner Brothers Studios in Los Angeles. It is now playing on Amazon Prime Video, and we'll keep you posted when this becomes a series, either on Amazon Prime Video or Amazon Freevee, both of which are available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices and multi-channel bundles or somewhere else. If you want to know more about the project and the production company making it happen, here's where you go online, conditiononemedia.com. That's conditiononemedia.com, and you can also find out about the pilot on Amazon.com or PrimeVideo.com. We will keep you posted, and once we find out it becomes a series and we know when the date is going to be, we'll bring our threesome back. Tim Kirkpatrick, Brian Tamayo, Daniel Mills, thank you all very, very much for coming on, and congratulations for an incredible run, an incredible road to make your project happen. It's a very special project, and we're pulling it for it to become a series, and sooner the better.
Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome, all of you. Take care and have a fantastic week.
You too. Thank you.
You too.
Tim Kirkpatrick from Newport Beach, California, Brian Tamayo from elsewhere in California, and Daniel Mills from Honolulu, all with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the newest programming services to get off the ground. It's much more than a service. It's also a new multi-channel bundle. It's called Momitu, and joining us will be two of its key executives, Brian Luzio and Charles Angelus. They will join us live from California after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, we reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you're a Star Trek buff, check out Trek Talking today, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on BTR. Everything you want to know about Star Trek, TV, movies, NFTs, and so much more. It's Trek Talking, and they talk today, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, kicking off your week. Simon Happ, I'm with you live from New Haven, New York. Again, we want to welcome the folks at Podbine.com for being our latest podcast affiliate. 76 degrees at the top of the hour. Rain on and off here in the New York metro area. We need it because of the drought situation we have in and throughout the metro area. And we have some wonderful guests coming your way in the next half hour. So be involved. Be interactive. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. About a week ago, a new television network came that was all about showcasing content, movies, TV series, documentaries, and more from all around the world. And not just that, but also to form the newest multi-channel bundle through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. The product is called Momitu. That's M-O-M-E-T-U. And joining us live right now from different parts of California are two of the key executives that are making it happen. First up, Brian Luzio. Brian, welcome in. And along with Brian, also joining us is Charles Angelus from Sacramento, California. Charles, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having us on the show today.
You're very, very welcome. Let me see if we can get Brian. We should get him any moment. And I believe we are about to get him. Brian, welcome aboard.
Hello there. How you doing, Simon? Thanks for having us.
Very fine, thank you. Brian, we'll start with you. What's been the reaction a week or so into Momitu's existence?
Oh man, it's been an exciting time. I mean, we're really excited to get this off the ground. We just had our launch party on Friday, and we've been hearing nothing but great things about the platform, about the just the experience that the viewers are going to get in the future, bringing on content from all around the world here to North America. So can't wait to hear more about it.
Charles, explain the title Momitu and what the purpose of the network is.
Well, I'd be happy to. So Momitu stands for More for Me and You, Mo, Me, Too. The two obviously is a hint at the Latin background and our interest in bringing international content that would otherwise be underserved or missed to North America. So our vision behind that is that it's more content for us to be able to provide as a company, as a sustainable company for our users, but also for our filmmakers. If this is about a collaboration with our filmmakers in a unique way that maybe doesn't exist on other platforms.
I was going to ask this later on in the conversation, Brian, but is one of the mandates to, given our last segment on Figure It Out, to provide a platform for new possible TV series like that one?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we definitely want to bring in an eclectic mix of different genres, but also with, like Charles said, things from around the world as well. So we want to highlight the underserved communities of filmmakers here domestically, but also bring in some new and exciting content from around the world that we really never get to see or don't get to see as much of here in North America.
Charles, how did this come together? How long has this service been worked for?
I think Brian's good to talk to about this, but I'll tell you from my perspective. I met Brian a few months back when I was in between companies, and I had come from another streaming service, and I felt like the stars had aligned. It was the right timing for us both, and I was super excited to be joining the team and help bring this product to market and then grow it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would
so
say
Brian,
Wait.
Give us a timeline for how this service happened, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, I mean, about a year and a half ago, group of industry veterans kind of got together. We were talking and looking at the opportunity to, like I said, bring the underserved filmmakers, both domestically, internationally, just content that we don't get to really get brought to the limelight here in North America. So we kind of look at, okay, why don't we just do this ourselves? And so we started kind of just spitballing the ideas, coming up with a name, coming up with an idea about how we can best do this. And yeah, I mean, a year and a half later, you're seeing what we've really worked hard to put together. Bringing a free platform. One of the biggest things, we wanted to make sure that it was free, that we wanted to make sure that everyone had access to it. We're never going to go subscription based. There's no subscriptions, no credit cards needed. That was one of the biggest things that we wanted to make as the forefront of our platform. And then, we've kind of mentioned a few times, just bringing the content from all around the world into one location to where North American viewers can get just a kind of a diverse and an inclusive mix of content that we really don't get to see very often here.
Yeah. Brian, let me just to clarify a bit, is it ad supported? What is the sort of the modus operandi in terms of the service, in terms of particularly making
money?
Yeah,
so you know, we got to make money somehow, right? So we're definitely not a nonprofit. So yeah, it is ad supported, but I mean, one of the largest, you know, streaming platform that's out there is, you know, being YouTube is ad supported, and everyone loves that. So definitely not something that we shy away from. It is ad supported, but again, it's free, no credit cards, not another subscription. You need to, you know, you got to click in, put your credit card in, and subscribe too. I think we all have enough of those here in North America, and I use them. I use them myself, so I can't, you know, I'm not gonna shame anyone for that. So, but yeah, we wanted to make sure that everyone had access to it. Whether you're using those platforms or not.
Charles, when you are a new player in this era of plentiful TV, and you're an independent player in this era of plentiful TV, what is the argument that you make to creators of content saying, be with us, we'll give you a great showcase, to advertisers, be with us, we'll give you a great experience that meets your needs? And finally, to the viewers saying, be with us. Mm-hmm. Give us a try. We're going to give you something X that you don't have from anywhere else that will make your viewing experience special.
That is an excellent question. For us, it starts with the idea that we are providing content that is diverse in thought and culture. So this is a perfect platform for that kind of content, for people looking for that. But also, our big passion behind this, our big piece to this, is that we believe in hand curation. We want to leverage machine learning and AI a little bit less, not lean on it quite as much as other platforms, and really focus on creative, cinephile-oriented curation by hand. Every single title and every single rail or carousel you see will be hand curated. And what that does is it allows us to provide an opportunity for those filmmakers from anywhere, whether it be from Asia, great titles from Nollywood or South America, to be able to have pole position, to be able to be up there. And for our users, it gives them a chance to really dive in and really discover unique content. We want to get our users out of the vacuum where they're constantly being fed the same kind of content, and then give them a variety of what they might like, what's adjacent to that, and something totally wacky or totally different that could be a surprise hit for them.
We're speaking with two key executives behind one of the newest streaming services around, Momitu, that stands for More for Me and You, and is currently running on smart TV sets and devices, including Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, and others as well. And they're also doing a multi-channel bundle with more than 200 different channels. We'll get to that in our next segment. We are speaking live from California with the two key executives. We have Brian Luzio joining us live from Los Angeles, Charles Angeles joining us from Sacramento, California, and they're both with us this half hour on Mavi Televised, and we're delighted you are along for the ride as well. Simon Alpon with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., namely Nueva York, 76 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guests, ring that in, 646-522-2906, or use the chat room, SimonAlpon04 by name. Coming up for the top of the hour, we will have the answer to our current classic trivia question. And then after the top of the hour, we'll have a brand-new classic trivia question for you with three prizes in play. Also, we'll have an update on Sunday Night Baseball, which last night did something very unique for the first time ever. We'll also have our Show to Know segment, which focuses on one of the top terrific Saturday morning shows in the 1960s that is now back for everyone to see on YouTube, The Magic Land of Alakazam. And finally, a farewell to one of the longest-running shows of its kind, Reliable Sources, which had its last episode yesterday on CNN. So stay tuned for all of that. Brian, tell us about some of the unique TV series, specials, movies, documentaries that people can find on Momitu right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going to find an eclectic mix. I mean, we're finding stuff domestically that there's some incredible content. I mean, as far as our series, you're seeing things span from all different decades. There's some newer stuff that is really engaging, some comedy pieces. But you're also getting some stuff that's some classics, like, you know, like some nostalgic stuff like Bonanza and Annie Oakley. So stuff that everyone's going to find from different generations that is really nice. But as far as the films, I mean, you're getting content from all over the globe. I mean, we have an incredible mix of films like Charles was mentioning, from Nollywood, stuff from Bollywood, even getting some stuff from Asia. So we're getting some incredible content from Korea and also from China. One of the films, actually, that we're really excited about is coming in September, we're going to have The Policeman's Lineage. We'll be the first ones to have it on our AVOD platform. And really excited about that. There's a couple of the cast members from the movie Parasite that are in that, and it's a really exciting, fast-paced thriller that I think everyone's going to really enjoy. So I definitely highly recommend jumping on Momitu for that. And then as far as the other piece, I think you kind of mentioned the last segment, but we have just over 200 live channels that we're going to be giving to people as well, so more of a passive experience to really – for someone that doesn't really want to pick and choose what they want to watch, they get an opportunity to kind of select something and just kind of go with the flow and let us kind of guide them in the direction they're going for that day. So,
Brian, with so many multi-channel bundles out there being distributed through smart TV sets and devices like Plex, I want to get back to Plex because we had them on our show last week in a very unique way. You have Plex, you have Pluto TV, you have Fubo TV, you have Stir and View It. And Zumo and so many others. What is going to differentiate your bundle from everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, you're naming some really, really incredible and successful platforms, and we love using those and we love learning from them as well. But one thing that Charles mentioned is the biggest piece that's really going to set us apart is the fact that we're hand curating everything. So, kind of dive deeper into that. Anytime you see a film in a different place or a genre or a category in a different location, it's our team wanting to bring you something unique to our viewers to change what they're used to, right? It's change the experience that they're getting. So, you know, someone that comes on for, say, Korean dramas, we want to give them some of that content, but we also want to expose them to some Nollywood films or some black cinema here from the United States. Or even some stuff in Spanish. I mean, some of my favorite content's in Spanish, and I love learning the language, but I also love, like, learning the culture. And that's another piece to what makes us unique. That's one of the things we're most passionate about is just giving everyone a unique experience as a viewer, as a cinephile, and really guiding and being part of that process with you.
Charles, it seems over the last year that multi-channel bundles are not just collecting channels, they are creating channels, and they're creating content. Tubi has been doing original made-for-TV movies for about a year now, documentary specials, even an animated series. They have another one on the way, too. Earlier this month, Fubo TV announced that they have a deal with Ryan Reynolds, the popular actor, to take his Maximum Effort production company and make a new original scripted, unscripted channel. And on our show this past Friday, we had Plex, another multi-channel bundle, which is also now getting into the business of creating channels, in this case with The Hill, the popular Capitol Hill-based news source, which started about a week or so ago. Is that in the game plan as well, to create channels as well as collect them and play them?
Did we lose Charles there?
Charles,
sorry,
there?
You guys there? Can you hear me? Yeah, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah,
okay,
you're
great.
On.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that the synthetic linear is definitely an area that we want to explore. We definitely want to look for channels that might be familiar, but also some that are not familiar. Taking existing content assets that we have on our VOD side and creating a nice channel that creates a really a good lean back experience, short films and documentaries, that's the kind of place we're going to be looking for, plus other genres, of course. That's definitely something we want to look into.
Yeah. By the way, are you getting proposals for people who say they want to launch new channels through you or to have you collaborate on saying the channel?
Yeah, 100%.
We've been hearing from a lot of people. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think one of the coolest things that, you know, even before our launch day, we had so many people reaching out. It was great to get that feedback that we're even, you know, doing something that people are loving even before it was even launched. We're getting a lot of people reaching out, wanting to, you know, on all different aspects. I mean, trying to, you know, wanting to get new content onto our platform, loving the direction that we're taking and the vision we have for the future. I think that feedback alone before we even launched was probably some of the most humbling and also really exciting information to get. And we look forward to partnering with more filmmakers in the future as well.
Speaking of feedback, by the way, apparently we are getting some. It may be on your end, so watch out. We'll see what happens. We'll try to correct the problem as we go along. Brian, in terms of ad support, how are you doing with that? And how many minutes an hour of ads, either on the main service or on the multi-channel bundle?
Sorry, I'm getting a lot. I think, Charles, I think it's coming from your side, but
sure.
If you want to maybe mute yourself real quick. While you're good. Sorry, can you repeat that, Simon?
Yeah, we're fine now. Go ahead.
Now, can you repeat the question? I didn't hear a single word you said there.
How are you doing with advertiser support early in the game, and how many minutes of ads per hour, either on the ad, on the main service or on the bundle?
Yeah, so we are partnered with an advertising company, so we are already set up fully on that that aspect. And we've had a lot of people reaching out wanting to help us with that as well. But as far as the timing, which I think is what viewers mostly care about, we're going to sit right around the 9 to 10 minute mark, you know, based on, you know, and it depends on the asset and the runtime. But that's kind of our sweet spot right there. Is right around the 9 to 10 minute mark, we're going to be, you know, placing ads in there. So just enough to where we're getting our advertising partners enough play, but at the same time, we also want to make sure our users don't get overwhelmed as well.
Charles, early in the game, are you getting a sense of what kind of shows on the main service people like? For example, are they gravitating toward this type of scripted series or that type of movie, whether it's a rom-com or straight drama or genre drama, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, it's just a little early to give like any definitive data, but one of the things we're looking for on the TV series side is titles from Asia, including Malaysia, Hong Kong, and Singapore and Korea. So that's really exciting to see that. On the movie side, it's definitely a faith-based film, titles from Africa, titles from Asia again, action, heavy action and heavy comedy from other parts of the world. That is what I'm seeing that is picking up right now.
We are speaking with two of the key executives behind Momitu, and they are Brian Luzio and Charles Angelis. They're both with us live from California, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, respectively, and they're both with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 76 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment or remaining minutes with our guests, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple, 04 by name. And join us on Thursday for our special episode where our sole and lead guest will be one and the same, Georgia Lee, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Netflix series produced right here in the Big Apple, Partner Track, that premieres on Friday. We'll talk to her about the program, about the actress who has had a very exciting life and a very unique life that may impact her portrayal in the show. And we'll also talk about a project that Georgia is involved with, try to get more series involving people and producers of color involved at Netflix. It's called a Writers Collective. You'll hear all about it when Georgia Lee joins us Thursday at a special time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, an hour later than normal, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brian, you mentioned that you're getting already proposals for new channels. What about proposals for new television series? Are they coming in from all over the world? Are they coming in largely from the United States and Canada? What kind of situation do you have there?
Yeah, so I mean, we have people reaching out, but, you know, one of the things that we also want to be fully understanding, we just launched, right? We just launched on Friday, so we're being patient. We're sitting down with people talking, but, yeah, we're definitely getting, you know, people coming to us that want to be on our platform. But at the same time, we also want to make sure that they're partnering, maybe not with us, just us directly, right? I mean, we want to see people be successful. And right now with Momi2 being so new, we also want to be very cautious on saying like that we can provide them everything they're looking for, right? I mean, we want to make sure that we get up and running and get our users up before we start promising everyone the world as well. So something that we're, you know, we're having honest conversations with filmmakers and making sure that we bring on the right content at the right time as well.
Yeah. Charles, any plans to do a New York screening of the service or approach the ad campaign here or go to TV festivals and stuff around the country in search of possible content?
We have a lot of ideas around that and what we could do with film festivals and film schools, but I think it's a bit early to talk about it. But, yeah, we're very excited about accessibility and shortening the path between a filmmaker and the streaming platform within the United States, Canada, and Mexico. But there's definitely more to come in that space.
Yeah. And what about looking at TV pilots as well? Because a lot of film festivals now are showing TV pilots. As well as TV festivals like the upcoming Northbolt and Gotham Week here in the New York metro area next month, as well as places, of course, like Series Fest in Denver, Dance with Films, which is a festival that took place earlier this summer where you are in California, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we're definitely interested in all kinds of content. Go ahead. I was going to say just all kinds of content. Well, I think we're on a unique platform that we don't have as many restrictions from anything from short films to TV series, documentaries, and horror. We want it all if it's coming from great creative filmmakers.
Absolutely. And I think with the – as far as, like, all the different festivals, I mean, yeah, it would be incredible to be the ones that people are reaching out to directly all the time and saying, I want to be on Momi2. Absolutely. We'd love that. But again, we're in the early phases, so we want to make sure we're also being very realistic of where we are in our time frame in comparison to some of the, you know, other incredible platforms too. So, but yeah, the sky's the limit for the future, and I think with what our vision is and what we have as far as what we would love to provide the filmmakers, I think that there's a great opportunity for partnerships in the future as well.
You mentioned earlier that some of your programming is some classic television. From mm-hmm. 50s, 60s, 70s, et cetera. And I would think it's not just the United States, but also Canada and other parts of the world. YouTube has really become now that YouTube is more and more becoming a television service, it's really become a unique home for classic TV. What kind of classic TV are you looking for to showcase on your service?
I mean, I think stuff that has been, you know, one of those nostalgic pieces, right? I mean, like things that like we have currently, like Dragnet and Bonanza and Batman, the Patty Duke Show. I mean, I talk to not to date anyone, but obviously like people like my parents and their friends and man, it just brings back great memories of things they grew up with, right? That nostalgic piece is so comforting to the heart, right? And that goes for even myself. I mean, watching things that I grew up on. So, but as far as our classics, I mean, I think if you go to the Momi2.com and you check out what we have on the site, I think it's going to bring back a lot of great memories for people that see the classics. But we're also bringing, you know, classic Western films and things that it really just, it brings you back to what, just a different cinematic experience and what really cinema is now because of the past, right? I think we're just trying to find things that are just nostalgic, but also things that are just great content in general.
Final question for both of you. It's going to be a variation on the question I ended the last half hour with. Has it hit you that you are now a player in television? No, an independent player, a new player, and you have, you know, in a way, beat the odds, even the Sarah Plentiful Television, and gotten a service and a bundle of services to viewers?
Yeah, I think every morning I kind of pinch myself. But it's no, it's really, someone actually mentioned that to me on Friday. They're like, you guys are launched. You guys are up and running. How does that feel? And I don't think it's completely set in yet. But I think that hearing the feedback we've gotten so far, since our launch and even just having you, I mean, it's humbling just to have you, have us on your show. I mean, to have your viewers hear our voices and to hear what Momitu is all about. I think it's really, really exciting, and I think the future is very bright for Momitu. And I really hope that viewers, when they come to our site, they do get to see an experience that's different from other platforms. And if there is anything that they're looking for, or anything that they'd love, I mean, please reach out to us. We're very very open books. I mean, we love to just talk to everyone, and we've already had people reaching out on our email and just kind of saying like, hey, are you going to have something like this? Are you going to be looking for this? Even filmmakers that are looking for a home. I mean, I think just reach out to us and ask us and talk to us, and we're going to respond and have a really, you know, a good, I would say a good relationship with our viewers. So, but again, I think going back to your question, it hasn't completely set in yet, but it's pretty exciting though. It definitely is.
Well, me too. It's an advertiser-supported video-on-demand service. It's also a multi-channel bundle with more than 200-plus channels. Some of the channels involved are World Poker Tour, Euro News, both in English and Spanish, and the Country Network. And they're both available on smart TV sets and devices such as Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, sets with Android TV as the operating system, and others to come. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, www.momitu.com. It's momitu.com. www.momitu.com. Brian Muzio, Charge, and Dellis joining us live from Los Angeles and Sacramento, California, respectively. Thank you both very much for being on this Monday. Congratulations on getting this new service off the ground. And have a strong hunch that you may be back with us very, very soon because of all the great things you're up to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks for taking the time to have us on your show. I really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. Pleasure all the way for both you and for ourselves, too. Take care. Have a fantastic week ahead.
All righty. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Brian Luzio and Charles Angelis joining us live from California this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now time for the answer to our classic trivia question we have posed over the last 2 weeks. Nobody got it, so nobody gets our prizes. Three prizes were in play. Two best-selling books, The Unexpected Danny Green by Paul Friedman and Flirting with Fame by noted PR entertainment guru Dan Harari, who both of which were on our show in recent weeks. And here is the question. Oh, plus the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set. Here is the question. Chevy Chase was the first Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live back on NBC in 1975. Who was second? We gave you two clues. It was a woman, and also like Chevy Chase, one of the not ready for prime time players. The answer, Jane Curtin. That's right, Jane Curtin, who later went on to have great fame in the primetime series with Susan St. James, Kate and Ally, which ran several seasons on CBS, to great acclaim and some Emmy Awards, too. That's the answer. Jane Curtin was the second Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live on NBC, and it happened in around 1976. We will have a new classic trivia question for you in our final half hour after the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. And if you're first with the correct answer, those three prizes we talked about, the books, The Unexpected Danny Green, and Flirting with Fame, and the Loud House Christmas card set from Nickelodeon, they will be back in play. So stay tuned. We have, I mean, a real classic trivia question for you, and that'll be coming your way after the top of the next hour. Also coming up in a few moments, we'll have an update on Sunday Night Baseball and something very special that they did last night that perhaps maybe other sports networks and regional sports services can do when it comes to covering baseball. We'll also have our newest show to know, one of the top Saturday morning TV series of the 1960s, finally now available on YouTube, The Magic Land of Alakazam. And we'll have a final farewell to reliable sources that wrapped up 29 years on CNN, one of the longest-running programs on that channel, yesterday. But first, let's pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneIn.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, Culture Freedom Radio, a unique radio experience, comes your way Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Culture Freedom Radio, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best of BTR always are on hand 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, and we welcome those of you that are joining us at the top of the hour. Sam Rabban with you live from New York. Thanks for being here for the latest edition of the program about TV's current and future. 77 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Skies have brightened up over the last half hour. We have had rain on and off here in the York metro area. That's going to be helping the drought situation all over the metro area. And we hope wherever you are, things are going great on this Monday afternoon. First of three episodes we are doing this very week, last full week of August 2022. And if you have a question or comment you want to get in our final half hour, don't be shy. Make a call with us. Here's the phone number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Chat room is still open. Simon Apple 04 by name is where the room is, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And in case you just joined us, we want to welcome a brand new podcast affiliate to our growing family, podvine.com. It's podvine.com. You can now get our episodes there, including the most recent one when we wrap up. And we have like about 200, 300 episodes that are already available there for you from recent years. So check it out, podvine.com. And while you're there, check out the other wonderful entertainment, news, and information podcast that you will find on that site. I had a chance to see it earlier this afternoon. Really, really wonderful. And we're so delighted that they have joined our growing number of podcast affiliates. Coming up in a little bit, we'll have an update segment or up segment on Sunday Night Baseball, which continues the controversial practice of talking to players while they're playing on the field. And last night, they did something quite special. It was the first for ESPN that maybe other sports networks, both national and regional, should do when it comes to covering baseball. I think it's a great way that they could build up interest in the game. Plus, we have our latest show to know. It deals with one of the great Saturday morning shows of the 1960s, finally available on YouTube, The Magic Land of Alakazam, featuring one of the best magic people ever on television, Mark Wilson. Getting that show on, by the way, is a wonderful story in itself. And finally, we'll have some farewell thoughts on the end of CNN's Reliable Sources with Brian Setter that took place yesterday. But first, let's bring you a brand new classic trivia question of the week. Let's pose the question right now. And if you're first with the correct answer by email, you'll get three prizes from Nickelodeon, the Loud House Christmas card set. And we have two great books coming your way, too, as well. One is a script, is a novel, The Unexpected Danny Green, by recent TVG guest Paul Freeman, that may become a television series before too long. And the other is a wonderful book about backstage entertainment called Flirting with Fame, by the celebrated public relations guru out of L.A., Dan Harari, who also was on our program a few weeks ago. And here's the question. One of the great TV franchises of all time, it started in the late 1940s and it continues even to this day, is Candid Camera. Here's the question. Who created Candid Camera? Who created Candid Camera? And in the beginning, he served as a host, later on a co-host, and again as a host. And his son is the most recent host. Who created Candid Camera? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name in the email along with your address so that if you win, get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. We have over 790 followers. We picked up quite a few over the last week, and we're on track toward making 800. Maybe we will by the end of this week. We'll let you know. Anyway, again, if we don't get a winner by the end of today, the question comes tomorrow to you on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. One more time, who created Candid Camera? SimonApple04@yahoo.com, and that could be your entryway to a great trio of prizes if you come up with the correct answer. So all the very best, be in to win, and make it happen, okay? Today, today. If you've been listening the last couple of weeks, you know that I have been doing a segment, I guess you now would be an up or update segment, about ESPN's controversial practice this year on Sunday Night Baseball, where they're wiring up players to talk while the game is in progress. We first talked about this two Mondays ago. Last Monday, we talked about the controversial situation where while someone is being interviewed by ESPN's announcing crew, there was a ground ball to them. They missed the ground ball, became a base hit, and it did impact the game. It was the game between the Yankees and the Red Sox. It involved the New York Yankees shortstop. We will not mention the name. And, of course, ultimately, the Yankees lost that game. Well, last night, yes, the practice continued. And they started a new practice. I believe they had never done it before, which I think could be a real boon for baseball if this was done more often by not just ESPN, but by other national and regional networks and local stations that cover the national pastime of baseball. It's called KidCast. It took place because the game that was on last night was actually held in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, the site of the current Little League World Series. And the idea was to have an announcing crew of kids. One, a high school student, recently graduated, and one, somebody getting into high school as the commentator. They were both from Bruce Beck's sportscasting camp. Bruce Beck is the former Madison Square Garden announcer who currently is the nightly sportscaster on WNBC-TV here in New York. He also does a Sunday night wrap-up show following Sunday Night Football or the late local newscast, News Center 4, or News Channel 4, I should say, on WNBC. And I'll tell you, Bruce Beck does a great job with that sportscasting camp, and he's come up with some winners. I thought that both the announcer and the commentator did a really great job. They didn't talk down to their audience. They talked right at them. And also they had special guests come in throughout. And in addition, when the action was sort of on the light side, they would talk about things like how the ballpark was going, the atmosphere, their favorite foods, all sorts of nice trivia. So this is something I think that at a time when baseball needs all the audience it can get because the ratings are down, all over the place, nationally and regionally, this idea of a kids cast that would be done, let's say, several times a year, just marvelous. I hope ESPN will do it. I hope Fox will do it. I think it would be great for them to do it during the divisional playoffs, maybe during one World Series game. And if you want to know more about KidCast, go to ESPN.com. I believe they will have highlights of it at their website, and I hope they'll have highlights on upcoming SportsCenter episodes as well. So kudos to Sunday Night Baseball for attempting a KidCast, very similar to what Nickelodeon did the last 2 years with their NFL playoff game telecast, which I hope they'll bring back. And by the way, I understand that they will do a regular season game as well as a playoff game this coming NFL season. And now it's time for our regular feature, A Show to Know, where we highlight a program that usually is something that we think it's worth watching, wherever it may be, and you might not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, televised, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes we also use it to highlight a classic television show that is now available on YouTube. And that is the case here with our latest edition of A Show to Know. One of my favorite shows growing up in the 1960s happened in 1960 to 1964, first on CBS for two seasons and then on ABC. And I was a big fan of it. It's called The Magic Land of Alakazam. It was the first television series of any kind to showcase magic on a weekly basis and show it as something that was engaging, entertaining, fun, and suitable for the entire family, kids and adults alike, and, of course, as well. The person behind The Magic Land of Alakazam was a brilliant and very gifted man named Mark Wilson, who originally came up with the idea of a magic show on television growing up and then putting it on in 1955 in Dallas, Texas. He then did it on the local level in Houston and San Antonio, and then he was able to bring it to Hollywood, specifically to CBS, where it went on the air in the fall of 1960, and sponsored by Kellogg's. Mark Wilson went on, as I said, to do 4 years of the show. Then it was syndicated nationally, but that was not the end of Mark Wilson's career. He then did a series of specials with Pillsbury as a sponsor in syndication called Magic Circle in the early 1970s, and the late 1970s, he did a show called The Magic of Mark Wilson. Well, before he died in January of last year, his organization put together DVDs of The Magic Land of Alakazam, released their first season on CBS, 6061, as well as the Magic Circle specials, as well as selected episodes of The Magic of Mark Wilson. And I'm delighted to say that after a year and a half since his death, those specials that series is now available on YouTube and free to you, and they're put together in packages or groups of episodes. One thing you'll see about The Magic Land of Alakazam, it was a family show, both on camera and off camera. That's because Mark Wilson, and he did this from the get-go, involved his wife, his partner in life all along, Nani Darnell, and their sons in the action. He also had them involved in the writing of the show. And Mark was also a great salesperson for Kellogg. He not only did the show, he did commercials that happened in the middle of the show or throughout the show for Kellogg's Rice Krispies, sugar, other cornflakes, other cereals. And on some of the commercials, he actually does magic tricks, like, for example, taking Snap, Crackle, and Pop, the cartoon characters that are on the boxes of Kellogg's Rice Krispies, and putting them on playing cards. Mark was probably the most enthusiastic, gifted magician you could ever find. He also, by the way, served as a consultant to people like Bill Bixby when he did the show The Magician for one season on NBC, as well as other magicians, both professional and amateur. And incidentally, he kept doing his craft until the very month he died in January of 2021. If you've never seen The Magic Land of Alakazam, I think you'll love this show. Get the whole family to see it. It's really marvelous and glorious black and white. You do see the Kellogg commercials. And also, you'll see the first example of live-action animation where Mark Wilson would introduce and have a cartoon with Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, or Pixie and Dixie. And before the cartoon, you would see a split screen of the Hanna-Barbera character that was about to have the cartoon and Mark talking back and forth to each other. It's a lot of fun, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And if you haven't seen Magic Circus or the Magic Mark Wilson, I think you'll enjoy those shows as well. They all feature a magician at the top of his game and someone who really believed that magic could be a wonderful force on television. Nobody's done it better since. The Magic Land of Alakazam, now playing along with Magic Circus and the Magic of Mark Wilson on YouTube in glorious black and white, in the case of Alakazam, color for the other shows. And again, check them all out on YouTube. You can find them at YouTube.com. YouTube, of course, available not only as a computer service, but also more and more on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. If you've never had the experience of being in the Magic Land of Alakazam, check it out. I think you will be royally entertained, you and your family. And if you have an idea for a show to know, I'd love to hear it from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Let us know what the show is, how long it's been on, and why you think we should highlight it on this feature. And if we do, you get the credit. So remember, let us know all the information and email me with it, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon WT. Either way, like I said, if we use your suggestion on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. For many, many years, television had tinkered with the idea of doing a weekly series about the media, including itself as a media. Channel 13 WNET was one of the first to give it a try on a national level, the program called Behind the Line. The original was a local show, and then for a season or two became national. In the early 1980s, PBS tried again with a weekly series with underwriting from General Electric called Inside Story. It was put together by Hiding Carter, the former State Department spokesperson for then former President Jimmy Carter. I had the chance to interview him when I was a correspondent at the entertainment newspaper Broadcast Week about one of the episodes of the show that dealt with how the Soviet Union should be covered on a day-to-day basis on television. And in fact, was there enough coverage of the Soviet Union on television, on nightly newscasts, and elsewhere on a regular basis? In 1993, CNN decided, let's get into the media criticism game, and they did, with a Saturday night series called Reliable Sources. Originally, it was anchored by Bernard Kalb, the former CNN and CBS News correspondent. He said it all at the beginning. It was a program taking a critical lens on the media. It covered a lot of territory during his time, and then it was succeeded by Howie Kurtz, the former reporter for the Washington Post. In his glory days, Reliable Sources was a wonderful portrait of how the media was covered all over the place. Positively and negatively. The show was fearless, and it was also timely, and more importantly, it was fair, both on the positive and the negative side of its subject. It had great commentators. It had wonderful background reporting. It had all sorts of special features, and it worked like a charm for many, many years as a Saturday night, early Saturday night feature. In 2015, Brian Seltzer, who had come to prominence both as a reporter for the New York Times and before that, the originator of the popular website TVNewsers.com, one of the first to cover broadcast journalism on a regular basis while he was in college, became the host of Reliable Sources. And it looked like Reliable Sources was going to become, to enter a new dimension. And it did for a good while. Unfortunately, yesterday, after 29 years on the air, Brian Seltzer had his final run as the host of Reliable Sources. He was fired a few days earlier. The situation was linked to National Public Radio, ironically by its media correspondent, David Folkenick, a few days early, then CNN made it official. And in spite of that, a firing Seltzer, they gave him the opportunity to one last episode yesterday. And it was a classy episode. Many of the ongoing journalists who came on that program regularly, like Claire Atkinson, formerly of Broadcasting Cable, now with Business Insider, Carl Bernstein, David Zaraznik, the wonderful critic from Baltimore Press, and also at one point was a regular on Reliable Sources, and also that, but also on Media Buzz when Howie Kurtz took it over on Fox News Channel. And also the first guest on Reliable Sources that Bernard Kalb interviewed on the program, that person came back to give us his thoughts about the state of media. Why did Reliable Sources go off the air? Well, it had been in ratings problems the last couple of years. Currently, Reliable Sources, at the time, Reliable Sources had gone from several million people watching the program in its Saturday night heyday to about 300,000, 400,000 people at best in its final couple of years on the air. While Media Buzz, which was running opposite it at 11 a.m. Eastern time, was getting anywhere from 1 million to 1.4 million, 1.5 million, 2 million people a shot. But it wasn't just ratings that was the issue. And it wasn't just, frankly, the change in CNN management recently. And high on, the exit of Jeff Zucker, the hiring of former CBS Chris Licht from Stephen Colbert's Late Show, and before that, CBS This Morning, and, of course, the new management of Warner Bros. Discovery. Frankly, Reliable Sources have reached a sad point in its run. For the last couple of years, under Seltzer, Reliable Sources became a one-note, in this person's opinion, became a one-sided, one-note, one-issue story. I think you can take a guess or two what that issue was. And it would be repeated over and over and over and over and over again ad nauseum, episode in, episode out. And when it happened, it was always one side and not the other side. And that's a shame because of that, Reliable Sources missed out on a lot of critiquing the media that really needed critiquing, whether it was the war in Ukraine, how that was covered, the pandemic, how that was covered, the riots of 2020 and how that was covered, the whole situation with election fraud and how that was covered or not covered, the status of other bills passed by Congress, the Biden administration, other aspects of the Donald Trump administration, and so much more. It was always one thing, one note, one-sided. And when you are doing a weekly program about coverage of the media, that can be, and it turned out to be, an audience turnoff. And I want to say this about Brian Seltzer, the final host. There's a lot I like about him. He is enthusiastic about the subject. He is passionate about journalism. Very few people are to the extent he is, and he showcases it. And he wears it on his sleeve beautifully. And when he is not doing the one-note, one-sided thing, he can be brilliant. He can be terrific. And he asks the right questions, too. And he brings up so much as well. And it really is a shame that he got suckered into what I think was this one-note, one-sided, one-issue deal that I think really harmed Reliable Sources' credibility over the last 3 or 4 years, and especially the last couple of years in the height of the pandemic. And that's a shame because for most of its run, Reliable Sources was reliable, and it showcased how the media is covered, including this very medium, television. I'm very clear that Brian, and by the way, how Brian handled himself yesterday was absolutely positively first class, above board, took the high road all the way, and I thought his commentary at the very end was marvelous. I also thought Howie Kurtz's commentary at the end of Media Buzz, saluting Reliable Sources, was right on point. I think that everybody at Reliable Sources, including the late Bernard Kalb and Rick Lewis, the original executive producer of the series, should be congratulated for a 29-year run. Very few television programs of any kind, of any genre, run 29 years straight. They did. And congratulations to CNN for having reliable sources run week in and week out, even when some of the critiquing was on what was going on at their very network, good and bad. I hope that whatever CNN does from here, as they try to make their network more centrist, more what it really was originally out to be and was successful so many years, breaking news from all over the world, investigative reporting, solid interviews, and much, much more, and let the audience decide the opinion, if any, and not to have the news anchors be the opinion of record or the reporters be the opinion of record, but to have the viewers be the opinion of record, whatever their opinion is. I hope that in the new era of CNN, that a reliable sources type program is part of their format. It would be a shame if it wasn't. We need more media criticism on the air, not just one show on one network. We need it all over the place, because the more critiquing we get on a wide variety of media, online, on smart TV sets and multi-channel bundles, on interactivity, on broadcast, on cable, etc., the better we are as a public. We need more media critique programs, not less. And we know from the public television side of things how tough it was for those early pioneers like Behind the Lines and Inside Story to come on the air and stay on the air. Reliable Sources did it for 29 years. Media Buzz has done it for 9 years. And again, I hope that whatever CNN does from here, that some media critique or pop culture critique format, one that showcases not just interviews or debates or roundtables, but background reporting, on-location reporting, special reports, that is part of whatever CNN decides to do and what other people decide to do. I promise you that we will be a much better off society as a result. I wish Brian Seltzer well, whatever he does. He's a terrific writer and author. He proved that with his book on morning television several years ago that became The Morning Show on Apple TV+. He's only going into his third year this fall. And I hope that Brian, whatever he does, will bring that passion and bring that courage and bring that smarts to his new media enterprise. Because, again, we should have more reliable sources, not just one or two, on one or two services. We are a better society when the more reliable sources have, the more we view them. Again, I want to thank all of our guests for being here on Tomorrow Be Televised today and all of you for tuning in. We will be back on Thursday, special time, 1 hour later than normal. That's 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And we will have as our special guest and sole guest on the program, Georgia Lee, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Netflix series produced here in New York, Partner Track. It premieres on Friday. We'll find out her thoughts about making the series happen and about her special Writers Collective project out to create more series at Netflix involving producers and creators of color. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget to check out our podcasts anytime you like. They're available 24/7 at all sorts of places, including our new location at podvine.com. It's podvine.com. I'm talking the iRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Acast, TuneIn.com, Spreaker Podcast, podcast.google.com, Amazon Music, and Vizio Smart TV Sets, Apple TV Sets, and so many other places. And remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our very unique subjects today? New programming service Momentum, and the new pilot that might become a series, Figure It Out. We want to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name where you're emailing from. You can also use our special website to communicate. It's tomorrowwillbetelevised.podium.com. Go to the bottom of the screen. Use the question format at the bottom. If I get your question, use it on the air, you get the credit. We'd love to hear from you, and we do respond whatever you say. Within 24 hours. And don't forget, you can use that email for our regular feature, the classic trivia question of the week. today's classic trivia question. We're going to say it one more time. Who created Candid Camera? Three prizes in play. They can be yours if you're first with the answer by email. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And, of course, use that as well for our regular Show to Know segment. Again, we love hearing from you. So email me, find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. However you respond, we respond back to you. It's our promise to you because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website services are provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday and beyond. If you're in an area with the rain, take it easy. Give yourself extra time. We need the rain right now here and other parts of the country, and we'll all be the better for it. We'll be back on a special edition on Thursday with Georgia Lee, executive producer and showrunner of the new series on Netflix premiering on Friday, Partner Track. That's Thursday, special time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast destinations and website at onpodium.com. Whatever you're up to between now and then, of course, make it safe and make it great. And if you haven't been vaccinated, please see your doctor. Check on your medical situation. Remember, there's a lot of alternative treatments now available to you, including the Pfizer and Merck pills. They are available in many cases at your local pharmacy without a prescription and free. So take advantage of them if you can. And no matter what, make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.